Moncrief on News Talk.
It is time for So You Think You're an Auto, Declan Buckley and Dee Reddy. Join us once again. Good afternoon to you both.
Hello.
Hello. Hello. I've been best friends with someone for over 15 years. I don't know why I'm laughing, but it's just the first sentence like, have you been best friends?
Yes, yes.
We've shared everything, birthdays, breakups, even family holidays. But I recently found out that I'm not in her wedding party. To be honest, I was expecting to be her maid of honour. I'm trying to be supportive and happy for her, but I can't help feeling hurt and excluded. It's like I'm not as important to her as she is to me. I don't want to ruin her special time, but these feelings are eating away at me. Am I overreacting, or do I have a right to be upset? How do I handle this without causing unnecessary drama?
Well, the sympathy dripping off you there, Sean, in reading that out.
Sorry, I was just holding back the tears. Yeah. I really was, yeah.
I think on this one, yes, you are overreacting, but and it's kind of nothing to do with you, really. But it is also understandable in a way, because I think there's so much pressure on women around weddings and kind of performative relationships, you know, and stuff that's in culture that is pushed towards women from a very young age. So I can understand the feeling of, you know, she had imagined this girl's or this woman's wedding and had imagined herself playing a role in it. But at the end of the day, the wedding is about the two people that are getting married and their commitment to each other. It's not an opportunity to commit yourself further to a friend of 15 years. Mm. Unless that's your significant
best
other.
Best friend.
No, but she doesn't say, because she said, I'm not in her wedding party.
Yeah.
I was expecting to be her maid of honour, which implies that somebody else is her maid of honour.
Yes.
Yeah, but like, people have so many people to bear in mind around a wedding. It could be a sister. It could be a cousin that she's under pressure to include.
Yeah.
It could be a sister-in-law. You don't know. And I just think, like, yes, you've been friends for 15 years, but I always try to think of friendships as like groups of friends.
Like, she said best friend.
I know, but
best friend.
You kind of, if you think of it like a galaxy, you're sometimes in the same orbit as people. You're in the same sync and your lives align and it's easy to be there for each other and to support each other.
So they're not best friends.
No, but maybe they were. Maybe she's basing this on a few years ago, and they may come back around, but I would say probably won't come back around if she creates unnecessary drama around this and makes it about her.
What is unnecessary drama?
Yeah. Is this baby reindeer territory we're in here?
You don't know what I'm capable of doing. Look, the reason why I was kind of interjecting there with the old best friend, because I always find, and I thought that what you said was very interesting, because my reaction to the label best friend is that it's a little bit kind of immature, and it doesn't allow for the nuances that people have or the different roles that people play in anybody's life. You know, you may have people who are very close to you and they're very useful in a particular kind of situation, or there's people that, you know, you get on really well when you're in a different, in an alternative situation. And you may have very strong emotional bonds with both of those people. They're equivalents. There's no hierarchy. There's no best friend. That's what I'm kind of saying there. So to kind of come in at it with the best friend card is coming to the table with preconceptions. Now, you mentioned that, you know, there's a lot of pressure on women, and I don't know so much about that, but I do think it was very telling that in the letter, the person didn't describe or tell us who had been chosen to be in the wedding party. Because if the person had said, and they had the audacity to pick my future partner's sisters or, you know, her own sisters, or there's some, you know, where it would be completely obvious as to what other pressure created that choice.
Yeah.
Then you'd kind of get it and you go, okay, I see what's happened here, and I could give an actual judgment on the call.
The narrative
there's
there.
A gap in there that I'm going, you didn't tell us that for a reason, because maybe this is actually, you're making this all about you. And it's not, as you said, Dee, it's not all about you. It's about somebody else's wedding, and they're, for whatever reason, and people make difficult choices around weddings. Sometimes they have to exclude people from the wedding list entirely because they can't afford to have 8 billion people at the wedding. All of these things. So I think it's a bit mean to kind of, you know, criticise somebody's decisions. If you were that bestie friendy, there would probably have been a conversation where the other person would say, look, we're really close, but blah, 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 blah. So I'm having, you know, the sisters-in-law, because you know, whatever reason, there's loads of reasons. You know, my future husband doesn't have any brothers, so he's not going to have a best man. So we're going to swap over. People do weird things like that because they're trying to tick boxes. And a lot of those things are meaningless nonsense that only happen for the day. And afterwards will be forgotten about. So this letter writer has a choice to forget about it and just go along and be the friend, act like the best friend. And then, you know, later on when her friend is married and they never see each other ever again.
I will say as well, like, I mean, if the expectation is that, you know, you have to have everyone that you've been bridesmaid for as a bridesmaid, I'm screwed. I've been bridesmaid loads of times. But also, I wouldn't choose someone who is already making it all about them.
Like, yeah, yeah. She seems to want some degree of ownership over this on the day. Well, I'm the maid of honour. I'm the best
friend. Yeah, and that, again, it's that, that's the thing that's jumped out at me. You know, if you're going around labelling yourself as a best friend, you're either telling me that you're the only friend or you're telling me that you have a very limited understanding about how people's social relationships work. And that's, for me, is alarm bells.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Sorry.
You're not going to the wedding.
Yeah, just go to the wedding, buy them a nice present. My partner's mother is driving me crazy. She constantly meddles in our lives, offering unsolicited advice on everything from how we spend holidays to how we're raising our kids. Recently, she criticised our parenting choices in front of the family, which left me embarrassed and furious. My partner says I should just ignore her because that's just how she is. But I'm struggling to keep the peace. I don't want to start a huge argument or create tension in the family, but I feel like something has to change. She thinks she has the right to tell me how to cook and clean my own house. I swear she thinks she's housewife of the year. How do I set boundaries with her without making things worse?
Yeah, this is funny because this is like cut to after the wedding.
Yeah,
you know, it's like it's the next scene.
And yeah, she should ring her best friend.
She knows exactly what it feels like to have to shut up and you know, and just deal with the situation. Because, you know, life is about, you know, compromises, and there are often kind of these, you know, relationships where you go, okay, will I get my own way in this circumstance? Will I get the way that I think is the right way? Or do I have to be diplomatic or even just, you know, take one for the team and say nothing because it's the easiest way to keep the peace or whatever? I mean, this instance, you know, I thought it was quite interesting that this person's talking about setting boundaries but doesn't seem to know how to set a boundary. You can't imagine a boundary into somebody else's head. You can't, you know, what really seems to be written for me between the lines here is that this person believes that life should be handled in a certain way, and that when other people don't match up to that way of behaving, then they're crossing boundaries that have never been set. They've been set in stone in some ancient way that everybody should understand. And I'm going, no, the way you set boundaries is by speaking words or by, you know, saying something. It doesn't have to be an aggressive fight. It's, you know, maybe she could have a word in specifically about the instance where she was angry about the mother-in-law talking about how she's raising her children. She could just say it casually on the side, you know, I'd rather, if you have anything to say about how I'm raising the kids, it'd be better for me if you said it to me personally or the two of us personally, rather than saying it in front of other people, because that feels like a criticism to us. And I know you didn't mean it to be a criticism of us, because I'm sure you've got loads of fantastic ideas about raising children. You raised the person I love, blah, 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 you know.
Oh, that's a good line.
I know. I'm great.
Yeah.
That's why I'm on the show. Loads of qualifications.
I will say, though, what jumped out at me there was that she has raised it and she has communicated the issue to her partner. And I would have thought it is, the onus kind of is on the partner to set boundaries with his parents for them as a couple. And like, that's clearly not happening, and perhaps there's a frustration there with that not happening that is actually being, you know, put onto the mother-in-law as well. There is also the sort of passive-aggressive option, which would be, I think, Housewife of the Year, that great documentary is still in the cinemas, so you could organise a date with your mother-in-law. But yeah, like I kind of feel like she's addressed it with the person that is most appropriate to communicate it to his mother, and that's not been done.
Yeah, no, that's a good point, but that's kind of what I meant about worldviews and how people see the world, because families have cultures, and yeah. sometimes families aren't aware of what their cultures are. Some families' culture, and it's, you know, I'm not going to move into, it's a typical Irish thing to just kind of sweep things under the carpet and don't, you know, don't confront, you know,
well,
mammy being
that's
a demon
why I gave
or whatever.
The passive aggressive
yeah.
option.
yeah, no, exactly. And maybe that is what, you know, lobbing a grenade in by a little snide remark. But that's actually what's causing the problem in the first place, is that the mother here is throwing in her passive aggressive grenades into the conversation. And that's the culture. So what she'd be doing then is she'd be becoming part of the culture rather than creating a way of dealing with me and who I am in your family. And you're right that the partner, the husband or whatever, has a role to play in that. But maybe that role needs to be teased out by saying, look, that's the way things go for you, but that's not, you know, it's not normal for me. Mm. So we need to find a way that works.
I think the partner could be stepping up more.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's the way she is, my arse, says a texter. Yeah, that mother-in-law
exactly.
needs to know where the line is and which side she should stay on. With a big smile is the best way. One of those smiles that says, don't mess with me. The mother-in-law,
that's where you just bury your
mother-in-law
teeth.
Sounds like Mrs. Bouquet. All will be good when she kicks the bucket. Ha ha. Maybe that's the thing. Maybe the mother's been doing this her whole life. Maybe her family have enabled her to do that her whole
life. That's the problem.
And she's just a total weapon. And so, like, maybe we're past the point now where she's going to have some sort of teachable moment about this. She can't help herself because she thinks she knows best.
And also there's no consequences.
But that's why I think it's on her child to go, sorry, mum, it's not appropriate for you to criticise my partner or our parenting.
Yeah,
jog on.
But then what happens? See, sometimes I think people like the, you know, in that scenario, the reverse is true. Is that the kind of the in-law child, whatever way, you know, the kid's spouse has a lot more power in a situation because they walk in kind of all deferential and going, oh, you know, I don't want to upset the mother-in-law, but actually, you know, planting your feet down and going, you know, and speaking to the mother-in-law like an adult and going, you know, that might work with you. You might be able to bully your way with your kids, but that's not, I'm going to talk to you like, you know, woman to woman. And I'm going to let you know that that's not going to work for me. And this is very polite now, but, you know, because people read between the lines and go, okay, this one isn't going to be for pushing around. So it mightn't mean they have the best relationship, or it could mean that it actually creates a really good, solid relationship.
I know.
Talk three.
What's a relationship with this one? Yeah. And do it while you're baking or something, you know, just to kind of, you know.
And this is
housewife to housewife.
Add the stork margarine or any other margarine.
Yeah. just come back to the first question. Maybe the spurned best friend could sleep with the groom-to-be to get even. That's what would happen in EastEnders, after all. That's true.
That's definitely true.
Font of wisdom there from EastEnders.
Yes.
I work with someone who seems sweet and supportive on the surface, but they're making my job miserable. They're friendly they're friendly to my face, but during meetings, they undermine my ideas or take credit for my work. Last week, they presented one of my suggestions to our manager as their own, and it was approved without me even being mentioned. I don't want to come across as petty, but I'm feeling frustrated and undervalued. I heard through the grapevine that this colleague has been tipped for a promotion, but I can't help but think it should be me. After all, it's my work that is making him stand out. Should I confront him directly, speak to my manager, or just focus on doing my job and hope it resolves itself? Office politics.
Yes.
This one is interesting to me because my first instinct was like, you know, put your big boy pants on and, you know, say something, you know, make yourself known. But also part of the office politics from like a boss's point of view is watching how people manage people. And sometimes that form of like manipulation or, you know, crowd control or whatever you want to call it is seen as an asset. That person can actually get a team of people around them who'll support the fact that their ideas are actually, you know, their own ideas. And that's kind of impressive to see. I'm not saying I approve of it, but you know, sometimes you do need to kind of square up against these people. And like in the last question, you know, with the daughter-in-law and the mother-in-law, that even if there might seem to be like a power imbalance or a perceived power imbalance, that sometimes, you know, putting your feet into the ground and saying, this is where I stand on this thing, and having a word with that person going, why are you doing that? Why are you taking credit for my ideas? And passing them off as your own and see what happens. I wouldn't be, you know, I wouldn't come across, I wouldn't do it aggressively. I would just go, like, you know, I'm just asking a question kind of thing.
And just asking.
Yeah,
just
but
asking,
I mean, who's going to react well to that?
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, say, you know. They deny us vehemently and say, how dare you accuse me of this, blah de blah. And then it turns into a big thing.
If it was there, if it's very clearly that it was their idea and it's a personal conversation.
Is it though? Because we don't know that. Like, I think sometimes when people are brainstorming or collaborating or whatever, they can remember their own input in or contribution to an idea as more significant than it was. Or they maybe they aren't as good at communicating those ideas and this person just is. But I will say the language in the it kind of question is quite emotional. I kind of think this person needs to sort of, they don't have to be your friend or your enemy. They can just be your colleague. So just kind of don't think about the relationship too emotionally. Keep your guard up and just be cordial and professional.
Yeah. But be maybe a bit cuter about it. If they're having these brainstorming meetings, maybe save it a little bit back or make sure your idea, which you think is a top idea, gets to the boss rather than, you know, this person here communicates it and takes credit.
I'm reminded of something I saw. It was actually about President Obama, and he was in an office, like a meeting with one of his cabinets, whatever. And like it was about how women make comments or contributions, and then they're ignored, and then a man can say the same thing a few seconds
I just
later.
No, but that is true. Like it's a genuine phenomenon.
That's very good to you. I was triggered there. my woke brain exploded.
Oh my god! Little pellet exploded.
I'll stop talking now.
But you're a bit,
great point, yeah. Steve.
But your account on X is getting a lot of likes now, Declan. Think of it that way. So should they say something to the perpetrator or the boss or anyone?
No, I think as you say, just be a bit cuter.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's kind of a balance of both things. It's about recognizing that sometimes the contribution that you make isn't the contribution that saves the day, that, you know, you have these brainstorming team meetings because it's this team part that's conducive and whatever. And yeah, it is. It's about
teamwork sometimes makes dream work.
Does it? Yeah, it does. Yeah, I don't know. I like individual sports. But it's one of those ones where you go, you have to have a game plan at work as to where you want to position yourself, who your allies are and how you want to be perceived by the people. If you're oblivious and you're just kind of thinking that the whole world is in a level playing field and fair all the time, you're not really being kind of office political smart.
Yeah. Somebody says taking credit for others' work is part of the classification of bullying.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Going to the boss and simply say, you know that idea that such and such put forward? That was my idea. That's all you need. Your boss will want to know.
Yeah.
But you see, then it's what your word against theirs.
But I think that goes back to, like, how did this idea come about? Did it spring from this person fully formed, or was it part of, as you say, a team exercise or a brainstorm?
Yeah. Nikki says, as a manager myself, if I found out one of my team was doing this, I would see it as duplicitous and toxic. I would try to figure out how best to put a stop to it. I would certainly not see it as a positive trait. Well, no, indeed not.
That is what I said.
I
said it could be.
Nikki there, you see, typical manager. Nikki has the feet up, listening to the radio.
Yeah,
while everyone
go.
Else is sweating in another room trying to come up with good ideas.
She's an ideas person.
She is, yes. And what are they? I've been seeing someone for about 3 months, and while they're great in many ways, funny, caring, ambitious, there is major chemistry between us, and the sex is amazing. However, he has some habits that are starting to bother me. For example, he's always late, whether it's meeting for dinner or calling when he says he will. I'm left waiting and feeling unimportant. He also texts me very sporadically and claims that he is just a bad texter. I've hinted at how it bothers me, but nothing has changed. I'm starting to wonder if this is a sign of a deeper incompatibility, or am I being overly critical? Should I bring it up more directly or accept that nobody's perfect?
I mean, now it's my turn to feel triggered.
Okay, right.
Because I'm bad at both of those things.
But your sex is amazing, I assume.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, this, to be honest, could have been written about. No, I'm only messing. But no, our family nickname growing up, other families would refer to us as the Never Readies. I mean, that says everything. I think for this person, though, maybe look at whether this is specific to you or if it is, you know, maybe like it could, there's plenty of areas of neurodiversity that are linked to object permanence and to time blindness. So it could be that these are genuine traits that this person has, whether they're aware of it or not. But if they do this to everyone and it's like kind of systemic across their life, it's no reflection on how they feel about you whatsoever. So maybe do address it directly with them. Give them an opportunity to tell you if it's something that they struggle with, or, you know, if they don't do it to other people, then you've probably got your answer as to how interested they are in you as well.
Yeah. I do think though as well that people come into relationships with different kinds of needs. And unfortunately, like even if it is somebody who has like, you know, it's a condition or something, it still could be a scenario where that condition creates a barrier where they're unable to get their emotional needs met. And that's problematic because it's going to be one of those things where it's going to be like that forever. You know, you're signing up to that. I do also think that sometimes when people are in relationships that they can, you know, the whole he's just not that into you vibe where, you know, people, you know, it just depends on how it's evolved. If it's been always like this or whether or not it's changed suddenly or whether it's changed slightly. And, it, you know, because people chill as well and they, you know, they stop making as much effort. That's a red flag if they're not making the effort to make you feel desired or wanted or even respected. That's a red flag. So I mean, yeah. You know, it's a difficult one because it involves thinking exactly what it is that's bothering you, specific examples of what those things are, and whether or not the behavior around them is consistent. Because if it's erratic behavior and it's just changing all the time, that's just somebody who's suiting themselves. You know, with my limited understanding of what happens. If people
sure, yeah. Well, she says it's a habit, which kind of implies that he's always been like this. So.
Yeah,
well, people are just.
I mean, they're only
scatty. It mightn't be anything on the spectrum.
No, it might not be. But what I'm saying, all I was saying with that is just that, you know, there are brain types that do specifically struggle with those two areas, and whether that person sits on that spectrum of brain type or not, it doesn't really matter. It's more that like it's not always an intended or scatty or thoughtless thing for someone to do. It might actually be that they struggle to do otherwise.
I would imagine that if somebody is.
Look, I'm just being really protective because of the never ready thing.
Yeah. But it's also the thing about like if somebody says to you that I'm going to call you, you know, time unspecific, and they don't call you, I can't see how that's a neurodiverse behavior type, because and also if you personally are neurodiverse or you've had a lifetime of struggling with X, Y, and Z, you're either going to have found mechanisms that allow you to cope, or you've realized that sometimes telling people, particularly people you care a lot about, this is one of my issues, and you know, it's not meant to be a slight on you or how I feel about you. This is just something like you know I struggle with. So neither of those things seem to ever happen. So that's why I'm veering towards the whole, you know, this is just somebody who's not being, you know, who's just not coming to the relationship with the same level of intensity and expectation that you are. And that's
really? Yeah.
That's just an incompatibility.
So he's not a keeper.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
I don't want to say, coming
up to buying expensive presents yeah, time, you know, we've got to know now.
Step away from the window at Weir's. Step away.
Buy him a watch. There you go.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, isn't that meant to be bad luck, actually?
Is it?
I think there's some.
Well, then you'll have an answer in a reason.
There you go.
If you buy your partner or boyfriend a watch.
I thought that was a knife.
Oh, well, I mean, that's the reason.
I mean, get a household
knife. That went dark very quickly altogether there.
Merry Christmas,
everybody. Dee and Declan, thank you both very much. And thanks for your contributions through the year as well. Happy Christmas to you all.
The very same to you, everybody.
We'll talk to you in the new year.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.